There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live from Barasti, and Barasti building up already for what promises to be, well, what, just another average, run-of-the-mill, quiet Saturday of sport. Is it hell? Qualifying for the British Grand Prix with Lewis in bullish mood over at Silverstone. Super Saturday at Wimbledon. British number one takes on former world number one on centre court a little later on. England's women are taking on New Zealand women as we speak in an ODI over in the UK. England, India, Australia, Pakistan all in action tomorrow in T20s. Golf from the DDF-sponsored Irish Open, the Greenbrier over in the States. Full fixture list over in Super Rugby, plus all the latest from NRL, AFL and Super League. And if that weren't enough, it's the start of the Tour de France. Mark Cavendish in sprint contention on stage one of 2018 Le Tour. I think that's it. As I said, is it hell? Four words. World Cup quarterfinals.
Augustinsson has scored for Sweden. Big opportunity here and in. And Sweden are into the quarterfinals. Harry Kane, captain's goal for England.
Jesse Lingard, 3-0.
And England win on penalties.
Free header, and Russia score the only goal of the World Cup.
And Juba scores. Russia roars as one.
Oh, that's a gift for Rebic, who finishes magnificently. Sensational goal.
And he's done it.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
Indeed it is, and that's the place you need to be headed now for what promises to be an electrifying atmosphere throughout the afternoon. My name's Tom Urquhart, with you through until 6pm this evening. We are leading you all the way up to the kickoff of the first of two quarterfinals, the two remaining quarterfinals of the 2018 FIFA World Cup Russia. Joining me to talk you all the way through proceedings and, of course, to build up to the big game is CVR Collis van Rosenfeld. We'll be keeping an eye on his beloved rugby, on the tennis, amongst others, but of course we'll be talking World Cup. Have you enjoyed it thus far?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. Very good afternoon to all listeners. I think it's been a fantastic tournament, the tournament of surprises, and I think that's what's kept everybody glued to their screens. And of course, for once in a World Cup, England performing very well.
Hold those thoughts for just a moment.
It's coming home, Tom.
We will temper any sort of expectations. A big crowd's expected down here at Barasti. In fact, big crowd's turning out already. A number of Sweden shirts already turning up. We've got the England shirts in numbers as well. The word from the organiser, just been in conversation with Phil Hardy, the governor down here at Barasti. They have enjoyed record numbers over the last couple of weeks. They're expecting more today as well. So the advice from them is, if you want to come down, you want to watch England against Sweden, then Russia against Croatia. All the action starting at 6 o'clock. That's the first, the time, the kickoff for the first of the quarterfinals. Then you need to get down here early. Literally, if you can, within the next 45 minutes or so. From about 4 o'clock, things will get very, very busy. So if you're looking for an atmosphere, if you're looking for a big crowd, if you're looking for somewhere to have a memorable afternoon, get yourself down to Barasti where the game is always on. So Tom Urquhart, CVR, all the engineering, all the IT and all the support team are on board today. We've got Mark Archer as well. The key oracle has taken something of a late call, so thanks for that, Arch. We had a man down earlier, and you've taken one for the team.
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom, CVR and listeners. Yes, it's been a busy week. I've actually done a few shows at the Bridgewater with Tom, with Robbie and with Chris before he jetted off to watch that match last night, the Belgium-Brazil match, and it's great to be down here. Yes, Danny is pulled up lame on match day, and I've come off the substitute's bench, not even in the squad. So it's a very proud moment
for
me.
You're always in the squad. You're always in the squad.
Well, I thought I'd been left right out, Tom, at this stage. But very disappointed, actually, that you're not wearing your best Gareth Southgate Marks and Spencer waistcoat with It's Coming Home on. I know you're a proud English fan, so I'm disappointed to see you haven't sort of showing it loud and proud down here, Brasty.
Well, I just thought it was inappropriate given the weather conditions down here, because if you are heading down here, you'll know it is warm, so dress accordingly for that one. It is a little bit toasty, but, I mean, again, I asked the same question of you that I asked of CVR. How do you summarise this World Cup thus far?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't usually watch this many matches in a World Cup, but there's been great matchups between teams. upsets, drama, heroes, villains, last-minute winners, equalisers, penalty shootouts. It's had a bit of everything. And the quality of football and matches have been generally very good. We saw it revert to type a little bit yesterday with a pretty cagey match between France and Uruguay. Proper sort of playoff knockout football, but then we saw a really wonderful game between Brazil and Belgium with the upset really coming there. Belgium seeking a first World Cup victory, beating the 5-time champions Brazil, knocking them out of the tournament. And again, the drama will continue today. It's tough to read much into Sweden and England. They're going to be a very evenly poised match. And then we're going to have Russia, obviously the crowd favourites, at home, defying all expectations, who no one thought they'd get out of the group stage. They were the lowest ranking team. Playing in a quarterfinal against the talented Croatia, one of the teams of the tournament. So it's had a bit of everything. It's just been fascinating. It's been compelling viewing, Tom.
I was a little earlier on today when I was trying to dealing with the show and trying to put together the show and trying to work out sort of themes that were running through what is a plethora of sport to look forward to throughout Proceed. In fact, let's just do that first before we get on to themes, because we've got Super Rugby. That's on at the moment.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is we've got one live game at the moment. The Sydney Waratahs are taking on the Sunwolves from Japan, and they're giving them an absolute hammering. The Waratahs are leading that one 58-25. Earlier this morning, the Chiefs beat the Brumbies 24-19, and the Hurricanes beat the Blues. The Blues' terrible season continues, 42 points to 24.
Mark Archer is, of course, our resident cricket expert. We've got the England women taking on the NZ women, so you and I will be keeping an eye on that one. But we're in the midst of just a sort of plethora of T20 internationals at the moment. None for the men today, but lots tomorrow.
Yeah, there was a match last night. England defeated India to get back into that series at one apiece. India won the first T20 international. England struck back at Cardiff. They had a 5-wicket victory over India. That series is all now evenly poised going to the third and final T20 international. We're also seeing a tri-series taking place over in Zimbabwe, with Zimbabwe the hosts. You've got Australia there and also Pakistan. So those games are continuing there. And then we saw a very quick test match finished in 7 sessions where the West Indies comprehensively defeated Bangladesh by an innings and plenty, Tom. And it's a bit one-sided, but yeah, plenty of T20 cricket, limited overs cricket. Really looking forward to the test series in a month or so. India are in England. 5-test match series. They've got to get the T20s out of the way with that decisive match. They play 3 ODIs, and then it's a 5-test match series. Really looking forward to that. I think England have been disappointing in test cricket recent times. A lot of players with lots to prove there. India want to win away from home. Virat Kohli's got a point to prove. He hasn't done that well in the past in UK conditions. So some good subplots. And once we get the football out of the way, we can actually concentrate on some cricket for a change. Some summer sport. Can we get to the summer sport, please?
Well, talking of the summer sport, we've got Wimbledon, which is sort of living in the shadows of the World Cup at the moment. But a big day over at Wimbledon today. A number of the big guns are in action.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're an English fan. England at number one, Carl Edmund, will take on former champion Novak Djokovic. That game starts at 7:30. This evening, Tom, and then of course Nick Kyrgios takes on Kai Nishikori. That's happening at 7:30 this evening. Two live games at the moment. Giles Simon is taking on Matthew Edmund. He's took the first set 6-1, and Edmund is up in the second set 1-1. Del Porto taking on Bernard Perrault. He's leading 4-3 in the first set.
We will put you in touch with what's happening in the Green Brier and the DDF sponsored Irish Open a little later on. But there's also action from Silverstone as well, British Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's practice 3 has just finished now, and they'll go into qualifying later this afternoon. Lewis Hamilton with Mercedes. Disappointing race in Austria last week for the Mercedes team and Lewis Hamilton. They didn't get himself and Valtteri Bottas. Both basically cars had failure, and they both failed to finish, which means that Sebastian Vettel has retaken the lead in the Drivers' Championship by 1 point from Lewis Hamilton. But Lewis Hamilton has finished fastest in the final British Grand Prix practice. He's got the fastest time. He's followed by the Ferrari of Kimi Raikkonen, Valtteri Bottas in third, Sebastian Vettel in fourth, Daniel Verstappen in fifth, and Ricciardo. So very much the way the season's gone, Tom. You've got Mercedes, you've got Ferrari, and you've got Red Bull in the top six places in final practice. Let's see what happens when they head to qualifying later this afternoon.
Tour de France is underway. They are pedalling as we speak. They've departed from Noirmoutier en Lille in the Vendée region. Chris Froome has started his quest to win his record-equaling 5th tour under something of a shadow. We are expecting a bunch sprint a little later later on when they arrive in Fontenay-le-Comte. Mark Cavendish, we expect to be part of that group stage finish. He's chasing stage win and yellow jersey in the opening stage of Le Tour, which is underway. So we're going to keep an eye on that one for you as well. And as I said, all the other breaking, developing news stories from the world of sport we will bring to you. Forgot to mention that we are encouraging you to have your say as well. Text us on 4001. Equally, can have your say by dropping us a tweet at Dubai iSport at any point you wish. Best thing to do, though, is get yourself down here to Barasti. Get yourself here nice and early as well. Expecting record crowds, massive crowds for the England-Sweden game, which kicks off at 6 o'clock. So if you're looking to watch the game down here at Barasti, make sure you make a headway and a beeline down here nice and early. Back to that theme thing that I was talking about. So there is a certain song that's doing the rounds at the moment.
This is the moment they'll talk about. When Gascoigne chinked through as of old and stamped his indelible mark on Euro 96.
The DJ put the song on at the end. And suddenly, and we didn't know that everyone knew it, everyone starts singing it. And honestly, it's an unbelievable, unbelievable thing.
It's coming home now. I don't want to dwell on this one too much because it's been adopted as the sort of anthem for English football, and obviously it is being used over in Russia as well. It's being used as something of a clarion call for the England football team. Great news there. But I was sort of thinking as well, I mean, it's a phrase that gets used a lot in sport, isn't it? And when I was looking at what was going on down at Silverstone a little earlier on, what did they use? They said, it's coming home, because Lewis Hamilton was fastest in practice yesterday. Lewis Hamilton knows this circuit like the back of his hand. And there is this idea that Silverstone is the home of Formula One. Fair?
Oh, that's a bit controversial. I'm sure places like the Monaco Grand Prix and a few of those traditional races in Europe might disagree with that. But it is a very traditional race there at Silverstone. Rumours that it may not stay there for too much longer unless they can come to agreement with the Formula One promoters. But I think it's a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm going to open it up to listeners out there. I think in terms of the formulation of Formula One, I think that's deemed to be the home, isn't it? I mean, a lot of other circuits have become legendary part of the Formula One circuit and races worldwide. But in terms of the infrastructure, it's sort of set up and started there.
Many of the teams are actually based all around there. I think there's probably four or five of the Formula One teams. At least half of them are based in there where they do their testing. They have their sort of mechanics and their headquarters are based in Silverstone. So I guess from that way around, that sort of Milton Keynes, Northampton area, that could be one reason for calling it the home of Grand Prix.
So the next sort of rough synergy was Wimbledon. Let's get up to SW19, the home of tennis.
It's got to be, surely. I would say. I'd agree with that. I wouldn't agree with Silverstone as the home of F1, but Wimbledon, the home of tennis? Yeah, I'd go with that.
Staying with that theme, for me, Wimbledon, pretty much, in terms of the Grand Slams, yeah, it's the traditional home, isn't it? The grass of Wimbledon. Then you look at some of the other sports, Lords, cricket.
Yeah, there's nothing going on there. I checked that a little earlier.
I think, but it's home of cricket.
Middlesex might be there, but but it's just maybe this whole thing. And then you could take it a bit further afield because there's a lot of stories doing the rounds around Tour de France this year, suggesting, of course, the dominance of Chris Froome in this in recent years, but also some big hope for a French winner this year at the Tour de France as well. So they could bring that one home. Unless we forget, the one that's staring us in the face, Russia, and their progress through the tournament over in Russia at the moment.
Yeah, I don't feel enough has been said about Russia, Tom. I mean, their accomplishment so far has been absolutely unreal. And I mean, nobody even expected them to get out of that group. A lot of people fancied Egypt and Uruguay, I know, at the beginning of the tournament. But I must say, the way the Russians have been going about their business has been fantastic. It's been fantastic for the home nation. It's given them something to support. And to me, ultimately, one of the biggest upsets, of course, South Korea beating Germany, but Russia beating Spain. Nobody ever expected that.
You are listening to Dubai I-103.8 FM. You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on, and there are some games to talk about as well. We will, of course, be with you all the way through to kick off over in Russia for England against Sweden. That one kicks off at 6 o'clock. If you're coming on down to Barasti, get here now, please, because they are expecting big crowds, a possibility of queues outside as well. So just to avoid any of that headache, make sure you get yourself down here nice and early. In the meantime, meantime, though, we take a short break. If you'd like to share your thoughts and opinions with us on any of the topics that we're discussing, then feel free to text us on 4001. And just on that theme of the home of sports, maybe you want to share some of the other homes of sport the world over. If Lord's is the home of cricket, as Wimbledon is the home of tennis, what is the home of golf? What is the home of NFL? What is the home of AFL? If you can share your thoughts with us on any sports around the world, we'd love to get them from you.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill in association with Barasti Superdome. Football lives at Barasti this summer.
I thought we'd better get you a live score because there is live sport on at the moment. We're building up to England against Sweden, first of the two remaining quarterfinals of the FIFA World Cup. We're live down here at Barassi. Is going to hear there's already a hubbub of expectancy, a hubbub of atmosphere behind us at the moment. I walked in here about an hour ago or so and already big crowds building, a lot of England shirts, a lot of Sweden shirts. It will be a game that is played in good spirits, and I'm sure it will be supported in good spirits as well. In the meantime, though, we have some live from Super Rugby.
Yeah. Tom, we do. What I can tell you is Waratahs are taking on the Sunwolves, and well, they are running away with this one. It's nearly the end of the game. 79 minutes played. Sydney Waratahs 72, Sunwolves 25. We've also got one live game in the Rugby League. It's the Canterbury Bulldogs taking on the Canberra Raiders, and they're leading that one 26-14.
Right, let's get ourselves over to Russia now. Let's get the latest from yesterday's game. I want to start with the first of the two quarterfinals that took place yesterday. It was for two former World Cup holders. Uruguay winning the World Cup first ever time it was...
Yes, they won it the first time it was ever held, and they also won it twice. So two times winners. Versing the, was it 1998 when France won it at home. And fascinating clash. Uruguay have been incredibly strong defensively. They'd only conceded one goal up until this match. They suffered a massive blow before the match where their talisman, their Edison Cavani, was ruled out with injury. So Luis Suarez was the sort of the lone strike force, the big name player in that team. Of course, they have the two central defenders from Atletico Madrid, and they play very much like a club side. They're very together, well drilled, well coached, and they're very hard to break down. France, we know all the talent in the world. They've got multiple world-class players in all their positions, threats from everywhere. And in the end, the early goal, really, from Rafa Varane, the Real Madrid central defender, who got a glancing header into the corner, sort of blew the game open because Uruguay had to come out of their shell, had to play a bit. And unfortunately for the Uruguay keeper, he absolute howler. He basically let Antoine Griezmann shot go through his hands. It lobbed into the back of the net, and that was pretty much game done and dusted. 2-0 to France. Pretty solid professional performance. The bad news was Kylian Mbappe, such an amazing talent. He received a yellow card for a bit of play acting, a bit of sort of simulation. And I think now he's now received two yellow cards, and he will miss a semi-final against Belgium due to having two yellow cards. Four French players went into that match on yellow cards, so they were treading lightly. And Mbappe, of all things, got one for simulation and sort of trying to sort of delay play.
I thought they got wiped, didn't they?
Well, I have to check with that, but he definitely had a yellow card situation going
in. Before the quarters or after the quarters? I'm not sure. We'll double check that one. Let's just remind ourselves of how France beat Uruguay to reach the semis.
Uruguay have won their last seven matches. France are unbeaten in their last eight. The Group A winners face the Group C winners for a place in the semi-finals. Suarez, clever ball from Nandez in towards Stuani. Caceres taken down, and the volley towards goal is from Vecino. Antoine Griezmann stands behind this free kick. Griezmann and hunted towards goal and in by Raphael Varane, the defender. Strikes for France. It's their first attempt on target in this match, and it is the opening goal of this match. Look at how he makes tracks unimpeded. Nobody going with him. And Varane suddenly appears as Stuani was preparing to head it clear to safety. Lloris with a wonderful save, and Godin can't quite turn in the rebound. Lloris at full stretch. Outstanding goalkeeping to keep France in front. Tolisso. Here is Antoine Griezmann. Griezmann to shoot, and it's gone in! An error from Fernando Maslana. Antoine Griezmann with a second goal for France. A huge mistake from the highly experienced Uruguayan goalkeeper.
Griezmann with the shot. It looked to be a regulation save, but somehow the ball didn't stick. Is he trying to punch it away here, Muslera? Pogba. Tolisso just opened up for him. Could so easily have been goal number three for France. And France are through to the semi-finals at the 2018 World Cup. Uruguay 0, France 2.
France into the semis of the World Cup for the first time since 2006 after seeing off Uruguay with the help of that shocker from the goalkeeper, Fernando Muslera. CVR, from what you've seen of France so far in this tournament, are they world champions?
Yeah, I definitely think they are. You know, they've got a lot of firepower, and we've just mentioned a couple of the world-class players that they got in that team. France always seem to always have somebody to rely on. If Pogba's not firing, you know, they got Griezmann in the team and many, many more. And I think that they're always going to be too much for Uruguay yesterday. I always expected that, you know. Uruguay, especially going into that game without their talisman Cavani, we've seen what he's been doing through the World Cup. I always thought that it was going to be quite plain sailing for France. I think, obviously, their semi-final will be against Belgium. Belgium seems to be a very, very organised unit at this moment in time. But I think France can go the full distance the way they're looking at the moment.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because they've got all the talent there. They've got the strength in depth as well. I mean, other teams that are left in the tournament, will they look at France and not just that performance yesterday, but previous performances and say, you know, we've got a chance against them? Because they do have frailties, don't they?
They do, but I think if you look at who's remaining in the tournament now, everyone's got a chance about everyone. I think Brazil were the favourites going into yesterday's match, but Belgium turned them over, made some really smart tactical changes. And France, for me, I mean, they're my pick at the start of the tournament. I just think they've got enough talent across all their positions. They've got enough strength and depth that they can lose one or two players. Yesterday it was Blaise Matuidi, the PSG midfielder. He was out with injury. He came on. We saw that wonderful goal by Benjamin Pavon last week. Never heard of him before, but he looks like a really good player. So they just seem to have enough world-class ability in key positions. You know, up front with Griezmann, with Mbappe, behind them with Pogba, Matuidi, N'Golo Kanté, yeah. And then Hugo Lloris in goal, Rafa Varane in the centre of defence, Umtiti centre of defence. They've just got world-class talent who play at big clubs, are used to big occasions. And I've talked about in the last week or so how important having really good goalkeepers are at this stage of the tournament. They give their defence lots of confidence. They sort of dominate the game. They're big personalities. And we've seen that Hugo Lloris made a wonderful save on the stroke of half time yesterday. On the other hand, we saw a terrible mistake by the Uruguay goalkeeper that just basically, as soon as he conceded that goal, the Uruguayans basically gave up. It was game over. They knew they weren't going to come back from 2-0 down against France. So goalkeeping, so important. We'll see it with Belgium, with Thibaut Courtois. Made a group of wonderful saves yesterday to keep the Brazilians at bay. A particular save from Neymar with about 10 minutes remaining when Brazil were pushing and pushing and pushing. So goalkeeping, so important. France have a great goalkeeper. That's important. Belgium have a great goalkeeper. That's a massive match. That's going to be Tuesday, that semi-final. France taking on Belgium. So tough to call between those two teams.
Interesting, isn't it? Antoine Griezmann was good yesterday as well. But interesting that he didn't celebrate the goal. And a lot of people have been reacting to that. There was some suggestion that it was more out of embarrassment that the goalkeeper had such a hellish. He didn't want to sort of rub salt into the wound there. But he's also got this long history with Uruguay, isn't he? He's got family that come from Uruguay or ancestors that come from Uruguay. He says it's a place, a part of the world that he loves very much as well. So it showed the sort of the man that he is as well that he chose not to celebrate that goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he should be teaching Maradona a couple of things, to be perfectly honest with you. Maybe manners, Tom. And I think, to me, that's one thing that's really upset me about this World Cup, I think, is the lack of respect from current players and old players, and also just kind of game etiquette, if you want to call it such. And to me, yesterday it was a very, very nice gesture from him. I enjoy the guy celebrating, but I think, obviously, as you say, Uruguay's got special meaning to him. He chose not to celebrate, and I do respect him for it.
Let's talk Kylian Mbappe, if we can, because obviously he has burst onto the world scene of football, and he made headlines in the last game. He wasn't as influential yesterday, didn't get a huge amount of the ball, but that doesn't take anything away from the God-given talent that he's got. I mean, are we going too far? There have been suggestions that he might be the new, dare we say it,
No, I thought that was Marouane Fellaini. Fellaini. Coming up with that. No, Kylian Mbappe was awesome. Look, we saw him burst to life as a player on the international stage last weekend in the match against Argentina, that 4-3 victory, where he just has speed to burn. And at the very top level of any sport, if you have pure speed, you're just a handful. And he has that in abundance. He's got afterburners in those shoes. And every time he got space to run at the Argentinian defence last weekend, he just scared them to death. And I think the Uruguay defenders didn't give him space to turn, didn't give him a lot of sort of freedom to get going and get into gear. And he got a bit frustrated. But, yeah, what a talent. And he's just composed. You know, for a night, was it 19? When he had the chance to finish like he did last week, he was clinical. Put the ball away in the corners. He wasn't, didn't seem to dealt with the pressure really well. He just seems to be a talent, has the composure to finish in tough situations. And what a world-class talent. He has really burst on the scene and will be one of the players really born out of this World Cup.
Question is he the new Pelé? I think that might be taking it a little bit far. He is, after all, only 19 years old. So what is the answer to that? Well, this is a question that's being asked by football pundits the world over.
We're at France's training camp in the Moscow region. Now, you'll be able to see the French squad currently training ahead of Friday's game where they play Uruguay. Now, in the mix of the players, you should be able to spot Kylian Mbappe, who at such a young age has already made a remarkable impression at this World Cup. We want to meet some fans in Moscow to see what they make of the young rising star.
I think Kylian Mbappe is the future legend of football because he's very young.
I hope he, just like Messi and Ronaldo, that they actually, he stays focused and doesn't go off, because that can potentially make him lose that. So I wish him the best, and hopefully he grows big like they are. He's on the right path.
He has the potential to be the new Pelé.
So you think he's as good as Messi or Ronaldo?
Yes, because
he's 19 years old, so he can continue on growing and becoming even better than that.
Do you think Mbappe could ever be as good as Messi?
If he's going to be better than Messi, no, I think no.
Mais je pense qu'il continue comme ça et met toute la rapidité qu'il a et il arrive à faire bouger les défenses et à créer des espaces. Je pense que oui, il sera promis. Il est promis à bel avenir et derrière, il sera meilleur que Ronaldo, oui, je pense.
Mbappé on fire, il va nous faire gagner. Mbappé on fire.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, bringing the football stadium to you this summer.
Right, we are obviously one of the major focuses of The Grill this afternoon as we broadcast live from Barasti, which is already busy. It's getting busy down here. Build up for the quarterfinals, day two of the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Obviously, that's going to be our main focus. But lest we forget, there is plenty of other sport ongoing around the world. Let's do the live if we can now. Let's go to the Super Rugby. CVR, what you got?
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is the Waratahs have just ended against the Sunwolves. They beat the Sunwolves 77 points to 25 at 5:05 UAE time. The Bulls will take on the Jaguars. And then over to NRL, Canterbury Bulldogs taking on the Canberra Raiders. They're leading that one 26 points to 14.
I can tell you the Tour de France is up and running. They're pedalling on the streets of France at the moment, streets and roads, I should say. They have departed Noirmoutier en Lille in the Vendée region, heading off to Fontenay-le-Comte a little later on. Mark Cavendish expects to be part of it. 96 kilometres to go. The riders, therefore, are over the halfway point of stage one of Le Tour 2018. Peloton will be grateful. It's been a sedate affair so far before the carnage of the sprint to come. Not been as quite sedate for Jérôme Cousin, Kevin Ladonis and Johan Afredo trying to hold off the chasing pack. Their lead is holding at around 2:25 for now, but it'll be brought back sharply a little later on as the peloton catches up. Mark Archer is keeping an eye on the golf leaderboards for us. Let's go to Ireland, please. Dubai Duty Free.
Yeah, round three from the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, hosted, of course, by the Rory Foundation. The leaders are yet to tee off. They're going to go in the next half an hour. It's a three-way tie for the leader, 8 under par. The South African Eric Van Rooyen leads with Mathieu Pavon, the Frenchman, and Ryan Fox, the Kiwi. Joachim Lagergren is one shot back at 7 under par. And then we've seen the early guys teeing off today. John Ram has done well. He's 5 under par for his round today, 6 under par in total. He is through 12 holes, so he's got a real chance to go up the leaderboard. Andy Sullivan, the cheapy chap from England, is put in a clubhouse round of 7 under par. That's the best round of the day for a round of 65. He is also on 6 under par with Sam Horsfield. Just looking down the leaderboard to see who else is making a move. Rory McIlroy, 1 under par, T today. He's 2 under for the tournament. The tournament host, plenty of pressure on him this week. And so big names there. Top the lead is about to go off. Eric Van Rooyen, Matteo Pavon, and Ryan Fox tee off in the next half an hour.
We've got the British Grand Prix ongoing as well. That gets underway tomorrow, but we're qualifying a little later this afternoon. That one, qualifying, interestingly, starts at 5 o'clock BST. 5 o'clock local time here in the UAE, 2 o'clock over there. And given the fact that Lewis Hamilton is a big England football fan, we're expecting him to go very, very fast today in qualifying.
Do you think he made that request through to the organisers? I'd like to do qualifying an hour earlier. Can you move it for me? Because he's the 5 times champion at Silverstone, so maybe he's got the right to sort of change when the qualifying comes.
And it wouldn't surprise me, as Tom said, he's a massive, massive supporter, and I think he's basically arranging his whole schedule, Tom, around how England are doing within the World Cup.
Fascinating time for Silverstone. It is, as it stands, 2019 race. Next year will be the last on the track at Silverstone, unless an agreement between its owners and F1 management can be made. But in the meantime, we'll bring you all the latest from that one, the final hour of the show. There has been problems a little earlier on, been a couple of big crashes during the practices, but qualifying will get underway, as I said, at 5 o'clock local time here in the UAE. Tennis, what's happening at Wimbledon?
Yeah, the home of tennis at Wimbledon. Giles Simon is taking on Matthew Ebden at the moment, and what I can tell you is Giles Simon won the first set 6-1. It's 4-all in the second set. John Del Porto is taking on Bernard Pereira. Del Porto won the first set 6-4, and it's on serve at 3-2 in the second set. Dennis Novak and, of course, runner-up Milos Raonic are currently... They were playing. Sorry, that game has been interrupted. It is 1-all there. Later on this afternoon, what I can tell you is Kyle Edmund is taking on Novak Djokovic. That starts at 7:30. Nick Kyrgios taking Kai Nishikori. That game kicks off at 6:32. And then on the women's side of the draw, it's Ashley Barty taking on Daria Kasatkina. Daria Kasatkina won the first set 7-5, and it's on serve at 3-2 in the second set.
Let's go back to the World Cup, because yesterday we saw the first of our two quarterfinals. We saw France make their way through with a good victory, a convincing victory against Uruguay. Their opponents were either to be Belgium or Brazil, and this is what happened.
Brazil against Belgium. Here comes the Brazil corner. Miranda got something on it. Oh, and then Thiago Silva, and somehow it bounces back off the woodwork. What a remarkable escape that was for Belgium. Flicked on the near post, and they have the lead. Vincent Kompany and Brazil concede first. Kompany attacks the near post, and then the two Brazilians mess it up, and it's off Fernandinho, off his elbow and in. Here's Lukaku now, like a tank. He's done well. De Bruyne, 2-0! Belgium! What is going on here? Brazil in deep, deep trouble now. Taken quickly. Coutinho and Courtois again. I tell you what, this keeper's in the mood today, the Chelsea goalkeeper. So here comes the substitution with Paulinho coming off to be replaced by the elegant midfield player René Augusto. Played in, and now they do get a goal. René Augusto, the substitute. He's only just come on, and he's given Brazil a lifeline. And a great save from Courtois to deny Neymar. They are knocked out. The favourites have gone. Belgium have pulled off one of the biggest, if not the biggest, win in their history.
So Belgium make their way through to the semi-final stages, producing a brilliant performance to knock out the 5-time winners and reach the semi-finals for the first time since 1986. I like the look of this Belgium side. They seem to be coming together. I mean, it's interesting watching them yesterday, wasn't it? They started off really slow. They seemed to be a little bit weak at the back, a little bit frail at the back, but then they just got into their groove, and they've got so much talent on the field.
Hate to say I told you, Tom, but they were my call for the World Cup, and I remember Chris McCarthy saying on the show, "You're serious?" And I said, "Yes, I'm serious," because to your point, a lot of depth in the team, a lot of experience in the team, a lot of players playing in the Premier League. But yeah, started off a little bit slow yesterday, but you know, to me, the talisman is Kevin De Bruyne, and that guy's work rate yesterday, he was once again fantastic. Interesting to see Lukaku play a bit on the wing yesterday, and I thought he really did exceptionally well there. So, yeah. But I think coming back to Archer's point, they got Courtois in goals, and the guy is so calm under pressure. He just seems to take a lot of pressure off his defenders. Very, very organized at the back, and he made some fantastic saves yesterday. And I think, you know, he didn't get enough recognition for what he did in yesterday's game. But, yeah, Belgium have been going about their business very slowly. They've knocked out the big favorites. France is going to be another big, big ask for them. But I think if you look at the team, if you see how the players are performing, they really do have a good team that I believe can go all the way and win the World Cup.
It's going to be a fascinating semi-final between them and France. Let's have a word about Eden Hazard, though. He was absolutely sublime yesterday.
Yeah, the tandem that he forms with Kevin De Bruyne are two of the most dynamic midfielders. We know for their form from the Premier League, but also in world football. And he was magnificent, as was to a player. They really had to play at their best to beat a stacked Brazil. And, you know, what we talked about this golden generation of Belgium for a number of years, but they never really lived up to it. They tended to sort of flatter to deceive a touch. But now they've really, this is what that was expected of them, to go on and get a really big result and show their talent. And they've been able to do that. Key for me, though, one of the question marks I had about Belgium at the start of the tournament was they need Vincent Kompany. The leadership he provides, the steady, cool hand at centre of defence. He sees everything in front of him. He's such a good reader of the play, and he's their sort of their talisman, their leader in terms of that sense and their defensive makeup. The bigger thing that I learned yesterday was the coaching and the managership of Roberto Martinez, who had to make a big choice yesterday because he had to sort of be pragmatic enough to say, look, Belgium, for all their talents attacking-wise and for all the wonderful football they can play, they're not going to out-football Brazil. So there's no point trying to take them on at their own game. So what he did is he changed the lineup. He brought in Marouane Fellaini to be a bit of a stopper, to be a pest in midfield, to break up play, to get in the way, sort of knock a few Brazilians over, for want of a better word. And he did that. He disrupted play, disrupted the rhythm. He won a lot. That means it gave them a direct option to go sort of bypass the midfield where he would nod it down. And he did a really good job. So they played with him and Witsel in midfield as the two sort of holding midfielders. That gives the space for De Bruyne to get box to box and gives Hazard the freedom up front. So tactically, they got it right against Brazil, where it was so easy for Belgium to go, we'll just go and try and out-football them, which was would have been the wrong move. And they said, well, we're going to change our style, we're going to mix it up, and this is what we're going to do. Fellaini starts, try the changes, and it worked for them. And you've got to give your hat off to good coaching. Great sort of strategy-wise for Martinez, and the players that implemented it say, you know, well played.
Is there the thing that struck me as well is their ability to break. You know, they can turn defence into attack very, very quickly. They've got those sort of creative midfielders to be able to do that and break on the go. And I thought that's what kept caught Brazil napping to a certain degree.
Yeah, but I think you just hit the nail on the head, and I think that's what De Bruyne brings to your team. He's such a foot player. He covers so much of the pitch. And as you say, Tom, he can literally take the ball from the one off and put it into his own half. And I think with Hazard there, especially the role that Lukaku played yesterday, to your point on the counter-attack, they were absolutely fantastic. But I think Fellaini must really doesn't get enough credit of what he did yesterday, because I think there's a couple of bruised Brazilians in the change room after that game yesterday, and I think that's what kind of Fellaini brought into that game, that physical presence that was needed to disrupt the rhythm of the Brazilians.
Let's have a quick word about Neymar if we can, because obviously he's been one of the poster boys of this tournament with good reason. He's one of the most talented footballers on the planet at present, and one of the best played as well. But with him comes a little bit of baggage, and we've seen the good and the bad of Neymar during this tournament. And again, we saw it during the 90 minutes yesterday.
Honestly, and I know I might get in trouble for saying this, I think he's been disgraceful, in all honesty. I don't think he's been the example that we're looking to set to young footballers today. I think he was more on the ground than on his feet during the tournament, and I just don't think he's giving a great example of what the game's all about and how the game should be played.
That said, though, he has, I mean, when you look at the stats, you look at the possession, you look at the touches he's had an amazing influence on the Brazil team during the tournaments thus far.
Tom, I'm not denying that. He's world class. He's ultimately one of the best players in the world at the moment, and I think one of the best players the world will ever see. He's a fantastic talent, not taking anything away from him, but I just don't agree with his behaviour.
But it's the decision making. I think that you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of the decision making that he has in the final moment, especially when he gets into or around the penalty box, where he's got the skill, he's got the God given talent to be able to go round defenders, to go past defenders, and to hit the ball sweetly. So why is there something in his head saying, I'm better off diving here?
Yeah, got no idea. I don't think it's good for him, for his image. I don't think it's good for the game, and to your point, I think it's really taking away from what Neymar really is.
The amazing thing about Neymar now is the referees and the crowd and the fans and the opposition players are all onto it. So every time he falls over, basically the referees are even it's the cry wolf situation, saying just get up on your feet, get on your feet.
We saw
and
that.
He's failed a lot.
We?
He has failed a lot. And generally, they had a couple of good penalty shouts yesterday, but he's not going to be given the benefit of the doubt. He's going to be given the benefit of the doubt that he's dived rather than the other way around. And even though they go to VAR, the VAR, you know, the guys looking at the videos are also going to assess it and not give him any benefit of the doubt. And that's unfortunate because he's created that scenario. Whereas a lot of what we'd call honest players, if they go down under a challenge, then we always think about penalty. With Neymar, we always think that he's dived. And that then he's going to have to deal with that as he grows up and, you know, as matures as a player. He's still a young man. If he looks to some of the two other superstars, the Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, look, they get hit a lot with heavy challenges, but they've learned to deal with it. They get up and they move on, and they've kind of over that. He's going to have to deal with this his career because he's going to be targeted physically. Guys are going to try and push him around, are going to try and kick him because that's what you have to do to disrupt his style, and he's going to have to learn to deal with it. And at the moment, he's not dealing with it the right way.
But I think to your point, Arch, he's now getting the wrong side of the stick because he's really brought this upon himself. And I think a lot of decisions that could actually go his way aren't going to go his way because nobody's giving the benefit of the doubt.
It was just interesting. I was interested watching the referee yesterday, and there's almost a couple of times. And we saw that sort of change. We saw the two sides of Neymar yesterday. There was a couple of occasions when he dived and the referee looked at him. And you saw Neymar wanting to get on with the game rather than remonstrating as we have seen in the past. But it's this sense... I know it's something that the Swedes have been criticising the England team about this week, the sense of entitlement, and you certainly get that with Neymar. There's this idea that he feels hard done by on the field at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think, you know, maybe to your point, Tom, you just said it earlier, maybe it's mentally something that's blocking in his head or whatever the case is, but he's like a little crying baby every time, you know, and he always feels like he's always going to the referee that he's getting the raw deal, and I think this has just put a totally negative persona on him as a player, and it's really taken away what Neymar can do, because when Neymar's on form, he's brilliant. He's ultimately one of the best in the world, and I think Neymar's kind of got this negative stigma on him now that referees look at him and will never give him the benefit of the doubt.
Quick mention as well for a couple of players. You mentioned, this opportunity for us to see the likes of Pavan for France, amongst others. I haven't seen a huge amount of Witsel because obviously he plays all of his club football over in China at the moment. Good, you know, is that holding mid, that combination he's got with Fellaini as well. You can't tell them two apart because they've got the same haircut as well. So
same barber.
Nigh on impossible. Interesting as well. Going through, and I couldn't. I said, why is this guy not playing in the Premier League? Why is this guy not playing in Real Madrid or Serie A or something like that? And then the commentator said, well, it might have something to do with the £20 million a year he gets paid.
China's big money, Tom.
And £20 million a year.
I would go play there too.
We're going to take a short break when we come back. Wimbledon.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
Indeed it is, and it's busy down here. So if you're heading on down to Barasti, get yourself here now, because things are filling up, whether it be down in the Superdome or over in the tented areas or in the traditional Barasti areas. Then they are expecting record crowds this evening, and with good reason as well. It is the FIFA World Cup quarterfinals. Lest we not forget, though, there is plenty of other sport ongoing, none more so than Wimbledon, who have been blessed with some extraordinary weather over in southwest London. And let's just remind ourselves of what happened yesterday on day five of the action.
Welcome to the first Friday of these championships, and I do believe it's hotter than ever. Just wonderful conditions for watching tennis, playing tennis. And the young German prince will continue his search for the crown that will one day turn him into a king.
She's done it! There's the smile we've been waiting for from Evgenia Radina. The seeds continue to tumble in the women's draw.
And that's it. From a set down, Gael Monfils beats the 11th seed Sam Querrey.
First time into the fourth round here at Wimbledon. How proud are you of that statistic?
I'm very, very happy. Very happy. Long time I've been chasing for that, and
I'm happy now. Allez les Bleus.
It is indeed her first ever career top 10 win on anything other than a clay court, and she deserved it, and it is an upset, no question about that.
It means a lot. I can still not really believe it. It was such a tough match and such a big fight, so I'm really happy that I won this one.
First time, and he can't believe his luck. Stefano Tsitsipas, remember the name.
It's the perfect finish for the seven times former champion.
You see in this tournament so many top players have lost, and technically I'm not a top player, but I do have I do have the wins of one.
The match that looked like it was never going to end finally does.
Roger the Great continues his search for even more greatness.
Has he broken sweat?
Looks like he hasn't.
Once again, another masterclass.
So that's what happened yesterday on day five, an opportunity for us to sort of reflect on what's been. Let's start with that seed story if we can, fellas, because only the third round at Wimbledon already. There are only two of the top 10 seeds left in the women's draw. I suppose this is indicative of the problem of not just the women's game, but the men's game at the moment as well, when there's so much flux in terms of players' form and players picking and choosing the tournaments they're playing. It must be a nightmare for seeders to come up with a seeding.
Yeah, Tom, I think that's one problem. But I think the other issue to me of the women's game is consistency. You know, we've seen Serena Williams go off and have her baby. And ever since she's not been there, nobody has seemed to really step to the plate. We've had Simona Halep there for a bit. We've had Caroline Wozniacki there for a bit. We've got here and there a couple of players coming. But there's nobody really, you know, grabbing the mantle and going with it. And to me, I think that's really worrying about the women's game. To me, there's not a consistent performer. And especially if you look at after the first week of Wimbledon, there's only two seeds left. At the moment, Simona Halep, that's taken so long to win a Grand Slam. Of course, she won the French a couple of weeks ago. She's actually looking pretty good at this moment in time. But to me, even with the men's, if you take the men's game, you take Rafa Nadal and you take Federer out of it, Novak has had his problems. There doesn't seem to be any youngster really pushing through. And to me, that's a kind of an issue with tennis all around at the moment.
I think, let's bring Arch into this conversation. It's a moot point because it's one that the men's game is feeling at the moment, because when you've got the big guns of your Rafas and your Rogers who are picking and choosing which tournaments they're playing in, and obviously that's going to affect their world ranking points, but it's also going to affect their seeding points. So therefore, I mean, is there a point of seeding these days? Because gone are the days that everyone was playing in the same tournaments.
Despite Roger and Rafa picking and choosing the tournaments, it's all the number one and two seeds. So that kept apart in the side of the draw. Where it makes things more difficult is you look at the Serena Williams situation, where she took a long time out of the game. She had a baby, which is wonderful. She's come back. She's the 25th seed, which is neither here nor there for me. It's either, you know, she comes back and she probably, if she's fit and got some tennis under her belt, she should be in the top 10, if not the top five seeds. She just hasn't played enough. So that could cause potential disruption, because she will start taking on some of the big seeds at fourth round, fifth round, quarterfinal stage. That causes a bit of a dilemma. But, you know, so many, we've got two of the top 10 women left seeds after 1 week, and four of the top 10 men seeds got knocked out by the fourth round. Mm. So that is a bit like the football with the World Cup, where we're seeing kind of a lopsided draw now take place. So what's happened with the men's, Tom, is we've seen some of the men's seeds lose earlier. We've seen the Roger Federer's side of the draw actually open up with not many seeded players left. And the bottom end of the draw, which is Rafa Nadal, has the likes of Novak Djokovic and I think Juan Martín Del Potro. And that's getting loaded with the seeded players that are left. But that's tennis. If you're going to win it, you're going to have to beat some of these players at some stage.
But gone, I mean, I noticed that. What was it, first round? You got Wawrinka taking on Dimitrov. You know, Dimitrov is obviously one of the poster boys of the game. He's one of the marketable players out there at the moment, one of the young bunch coming through. You know, when you're drawn against Stan Wawrinka, yeah, okay, he's had his injury problems of late, and yeah, he's dropped down the rankings and the thing, but he's still a world-class player.
Yeah, but Thomas,
it's a disparity there, surely.
Yes, and
Carl Edmund against Novak Djokovic. Now, I mean, really?
Yeah, but really, to Archer's point, you've got to be able to beat the best if you want to win the tournament. So yeah, it's really not great for spectators viewing from our perspective, but I don't think it's a bad thing for the game.
But if what you're talking about is by not seeding, you could get Rafa Nadal versus Roger Federer drawn out of the hat and playing the first round. No one wants to see that. So you've got to give the top guys a chance to progress. And your players have been injured. Yeah, what can you do? Stan Wawrinka has been out for a long time. He came up against, could have got Kyrgios. Well, he could have got Kyrgios, didn't he? So, look, what do you do? What's the other way around it? You've got to be as fair as possible. You want to, we want the best players playing in the final, or the players that should be meeting at the back end of the tournament, not knocking each other out at early stage of the tournament.
And Tom, in all honesty, the easier Roger Federer's ride to the final is, the happier I am.
Of course, and you're not alone there, that's for sure as well. And it certainly seems to be opening up for Roger. We'll have more details on this one a little later on in the show. We are fast approaching the second hour of the show, and we're fast approaching kickoff over in Russia. 2 hours and counting now. At 6 o'clock sees England take on Sweden, the first of the quarterfinals this evening. If you'd like to watch it, then get yourself down here to Barasti, where the game is always on. If you are coming down here, though, get yourself here now, nice and early, because it's already busy.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.